The year is 175 BC. Who is the high priest? His name is Onias, better known as Onias the Third. We'll just call him Onias. He was likely a believer. How would Antiochus Epiphanes take down this godly man? Well, we're going to learn a lot about the devil's tactics as we take a look at it. He needed a traitor. He needed a Judas, as it were, basically a rat fink. The devil's tactics never change. And so Antiochus is going to find that man amongst the Jews, and with him, he's going to take down this prince of the covenant mentioned in verse 22.
The Bible says that the gospel of Christ is the power of God unto salvation. Welcome to Pulpit Power, featuring Pastor Tony Skeving, Senior Pastor of Fargo Baptist Church in Fargo, North Dakota. Today's message was previously preached before a church audience. And now, here's Pastor Skeving.
Well, let's take our Bibles and turn to the book of Daniel, one of the major prophets back in the Old Testament, a famous prophetic book along with the book of the Revelation. And chapter 11, where we are right now, folks, is probably one of the most precise chapters in all the Bible when it comes to prophecy. Now, we're going to pick up talking about the man Antiochus Epiphanes and how the devil used him. And this is what he looks like. If you take a look behind me, we have this bust of him, this actual individual that we're going to be studying tonight in the Eternal Word. And when we saw Antiochus Epiphanes recently, he was a hostage in Rome. You remember that Syria had racked up some more debt and Rome came collecting and they held hostages until the debt was paid off. And Dad had caused it, but now his son, Antiochus Epiphanes, got to go to Rome and sit it out. But there's some kind of an insurrection taking place and treason back in Syria. And so there's going to be a tag off. And you're going to see now the nephew of Antiochus Epiphanes, whose name is Demetrius Soter, go to Rome and tag off with his uncle. His uncle's going to go to Greece, pick up some Hellenism there, and then make his way over to Syria. Now, the reason that Demetrius Soter was sent to take the place of his uncle was for his own safety, because there were rumblings back in Syria of assassination. And we'll talk more about that later. But he's the new hostage now. And so Antiochus the Fourth, that's this fella, goes back to Syria and on the way home stops in Greece, picks up some more bad habits, takes in the heathenism, takes in the Hellenism. And anyway, he's going to use all of that later on God's people, the Jews. Now, that brings us to verse 21, backing up. It says, and in his estate. Now, who's his there? Well, that's Seleucus the Fourth Philopater. Who is he? Well, he is the brother of Antiochus Epiphanes, but he is the son of Antiochus the Great the Third. So now in his estate shall stand up a vile person, meaning Seleucus should have been the next king. But he gets assassinated. We'll talk about that more in a moment. So in his estate shall stand up a vile person. You can put the initials A.E. next to that if you want. Antiochus Epiphanes is the vile person, to whom they shall not give the honor of the kingdom, but he shall come in peaceably and attain the kingdom by flatteries. Now, this is the real meat of the chapter here. We're going to kind of park here and in verse 22 today. But his estate is Seleucus the Fourth Philopater, the brother of Antiochus Epiphanes. He's the vile person. And that's a word that God doesn't use for just any person in the Bible. Very few called vile, vile. God saves that word for a real scoundrel. And from this point on, just know this. For the next 15 verses, it's going to be talking about this despicable character by the name of Antiochus Epiphanes. We saw his bust just a moment ago. And he's not noble. He's not honorable. He is just the opposite. He's vile. He's a wretched man. And he's a wretch because of his treatment of the Jews. We're going to talk about that too. The Jews are special to God. They always have been, since the time of Abraham, the first Jew, 4,000 years ago. But during that time, there have been many who have afflicted the Jewish people, but none has afflicted them like Antiochus Epiphanes. Now, here we are, the year is about 175 BC, before the time of Christ. And just know this, after the Babylonian captivity, we find out, and which took place in 606 B.C., after the Babylonian captivity, we find Nebuchadnezzar has conquered the world. There's 70 years that have to be elapsed before the Jews can get their land back. And so they tick off. And during that time, Daniel goes from about a 19 or 20-year-old to about a 90-year-old. That's where we find him here about this time. He's suing for heaven, and he's asked God about the future of Israel. God sent Gabriel, you remember, to tell him the future of his people. They will be released, but the rebuilding project in Jerusalem will sputter. And anyway, there will be those who will try to complete their own houses when they shouldn't. They're not tithing. They're forsaking God's law. And obviously, they're not perfect. God rebukes them and curses them. But we find here that during that time, God uses various people like Nebuchadnezzar and others to chastise his people. But none like Antiochus Epiphanes. He's over the top. Who is he? Well, there were a number of Assyrian kings, but this was the most famous of all of them, and only because of how he affected the Jews, how he persecuted the Jews. He did not come to the throne as a rightful heir. The Bible says he obtained the throne by flatteries. And we find here he's called vile. That word means despicable. And think of all the despicable, vile people down through history. The Herod the Greats, the Pilates, the Vlad the Impalers, the Hitler himself. And we could talk about Pol Pot. We could talk about Stalin. All of these have been used of the devil. But Antiochus Epiphanes is no slouch. I would put him in the top 10 if there is such a list. Now, we find here he's a picture of the Antichrist. And the Antichrist may be alive and well today in the world. We don't know, but we can learn a lot about him from Antiochus Epiphanes. The Jews to this day still celebrate the festival of Hanukkah, and that is a feast commemorating the overthrow of Antiochus Epiphanes and the cleansing of the temple. And it was the revolt of the Maccabeans, led by Judas Maccabean. And we find out that Antiochus Epiphanes made it into the Bible because of how he affected the Jewish people. He actually is going to offer swine on the sacred altar there of the temple in Jerusalem. And he's going to get away with it. Something his brother didn't get away with. And we find out the Antichrist is going to get away with it too. That's upcoming yet. That tells us the temple does need to be rebuilt in Jerusalem. That means that the animal sacrifices do need to resume. And a lot of that is in place at this point. And we know that the Antichrist is going to desecrate that temple. Antiochus Epiphanes is a foreshadowing of the coming Antichrist. So we can learn a lot about the coming Antichrist from studying Antiochus Epiphanes. And we find that the Antichrist is going to do a lot of the exact same things. There's so many similarities and parallels. The Antichrist is going to cause unprecedented persecution, great persecution, martyrdom of the Jewish people, almost the annihilation of the Jewish people and of many people throughout the world. If I have the fraction right, somewhere around 2/3 of the world's population is going to perish during the tribulation period as the guillotine is revived, according to the book of the Revelation. And there's going to be a massive genocide, but nothing like the Jewish people are going to go through. It's going to be a time of Jacob's trouble. Remember that? The chaos of the tribulation, the 7-year tribulation period, actually is primarily a time of chastening for the Jewish people to turn them finally to receive their Messiah, Jesus Christ, as their Lord and Savior. Remember when the Jews had Christ put to death and Pilate said, "I want to be guilty for this." And he washed his hands of it. And remember what the Jews said? "His blood be on us and on our children." And that has come to pass not just through the Hitlers, but the Church of Rome and so many else. But the roots of incredible Jewish persecution really start with Antiochus Epiphanes. He's the founder of that, of the great persecution. Now, prophecy always has a near fulfillment and it has a far fulfillment. And we find the near fulfillment in Antiochus Epiphanes. We find the future far fulfillment in the Antichrist. Now, back in verse 21 again, it says, "And in his, Seleucus the Fourth, Philopater's estate, shall stand up a vile person." How would you like that for an introduction? That's how Antiochus Epiphanes is introduced to us. He's a wretch and he's evil. But how did he become king? Well, in verse 21, it tells us, "To whom they shall not give the honor of the kingdom, but he shall come in peaceably and obtain the kingdom by flatteries. That is exactly what happened. It's prophesied to happen hundreds of years ahead of time. See, Daniel's getting this around 500 B.C., but it's foretelling events around 175 B.C. So you got, what, 300-400 years in advance? And it tells us here that Antiochus is not going to obtain the kingdom rightfully. He's going to be a smooth talker. There have been some smooth talkers, have there not? There have been some great orators in the past. They say Sun Myung Moon was riveting. I'm thinking of a past president, very good orator. And Joseph Smith was a great orator. Jim Jones was a smooth talker. All of these, but none of them hold a candle to the Antichrist. He's going to be that good. And Antiochus Epiphanes was smooth as well. Again, the best overall picture we have of the Antichrist is Antiochus Epiphanes. And it's funny how that happens. It's odd how that all works out. So anyway, remember that after, and I'm going to back up, after Seleucus the IV needed some money, he sent Heliodorus to plunder the temple in Jerusalem. And that didn't go well. And so he comes back in a bad mood. He starts a revolt. And we find that Seleucus the IV sent some rumblings of something bad about to happen. And the natives were restless. And he heard rumors about the slaying of the royal family. That's happened throughout history. We know with the Tsar, Russia, and so on, the Bolsheviks. And so if the royal family is in danger, he's trying to get some of them out of Dodge. And that's how Demetrius Soter got to Rome. It was his idea to send them there. There he tags off with his uncle, Antiochus Epiphanes. And back yonder in Syria, we find that Seleucus is assassinated. So when Antiochus gets back, there's no king. Isn't that wonderful for him? He races back to Antioch. He starts his fast talking and his smooth talking. According to verse 21, he obtains the kingdom by flatteries. He's everybody's friend. And by the way, in the Bible, we find those guys. We find the Absaloms. We find the Korahs. We find those who use their oratorical skills and their phonies, but they take in the simple, and that's Antiochus. He does exactly that. And by the way, that will be the Antichrist. He'll do the exact same thing as well. Now, hold your place here and turn back to chapter 8, just a few pages, because we're given here a sneak preview of the same person, Antiochus Epiphanes. In verse 25, it says, "And through his policy also, he shall cause craft to prosper in his hand, and shall magnify himself in his heart, and by peace shall he destroy many." This is talking about Antiochus Epiphanes, but it's also talking about the Antichrist. They are that closely interwoven. Because in the remainder of the verse, it says, "And he shall also stand up against the prince of princes, but he shall be broken without hands." And the Antichrist is going down when Christ comes back. But notice, "by peace he shall destroy many." And that's kind of what we find back here in chapter 11. Now, that would sound contradictory. How do you destroy many by peace? I mean, that doesn't make sense. But that's why this line of disarm is honestly always bogus, because human nature is too sinful to trust. And so they say peace and safety and disarm and all that. And that just sets the stage for somebody like the Antichrist to come along. In 1 Thessalonians 5, Paul says, "For yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so cometh as a thief in the night. For when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction shall come upon them as travail upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape." So what is it during the tribulation period that's going to bring on this sudden destruction? I'll tell you what it is. Peace and safety. Peace and safety. Antiochus Epiphanes used that old line. And the Antichrist is going to use that same line. Do you remember in the early chapters of the book of the Revelation how the Antichrist makes his entrance on a white horse? Ever notice that? It's not a black horse. It's not a evil, ghoulish kind of a horse. It's a white horse. He comes in as the good guy. He comes in as everybody's friend, the hero. Everybody's going to love him. He's Mr. Smooth. He's going to have all the answers. He's on a white horse. And by the way, you'll also read there where he has a bow in his hand, but no arrows. That's the peace thing. So he's got this bow, but no arrows. How peaceful. So how is he going to conquer and come to power? With his mouth. He's going to do it with his mouth. He's going to lead the masses to disarm and say, let's make peace, peace and safety. And people's guards will drop. And that will make them vulnerable. You know, people can be very simple. And you see that if you're observant. And so it will be with the Antichrist. Now, the Antichrist, while we're talking peace and safety, the Antichrist is going to have a sidekick. Did you know that? He's known as the false prophet, a religious sidekick. And the Bible says this about him in Revelation 13. John says, and I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, and he spake as a dragon. Now, this is symbolic of him rising up from the masses of people. Another beast, the sidekick of the Antichrist, has two horns like a lamb. So he comes in like a lamb, but he speaks as a dragon, basically a wolf in sheepskin clothing. In other words, he's not what he really appears to be. And there are many like that. There are a number of politicians even where don't listen to what they're saying. Watch what they're doing. Do you follow what they're doing? The laws are enacting, not what they're saying, but what they're doing. Now, back here in Daniel chapter 11 again, notice in verse 21, in his estate, Seleucus's estate, shall stand up Antiochus Epiphanes, a vile person to whom they shall not give the honor of the kingdom, but he shall come and notice peaceably and obtain the kingdom by flatteries. You know what that Hebrew word flatteries means? It means slippery. You know anyone slippery? The Antichrist is going to be slippery. Antiochus Epiphanes was slippery. In fact, that word flatteries, I want to show you that word in the Hebrew in another place. In Psalm 35, verse 6 says of the evil, let their way be dark and slippery. Exact same as a real long Hebrew word that starts with K. I won't even try and pronounce it, but it's the exact same word for flatteries. Let their way be dark and slippery, and let the angel of the Lord persecute them. So the Antichrist is going to be slippery. He's going to be slimy. Know anyone like that? They're slimy. I've known people like that. Now, the Antichrist is going to lie, but he's not going to get caught. And Antiochus Epiphanes was a liar who got away with his lies. There was a historian, a Roman historian by the name of Livy, and he said this about Antiochus. He said Antiochus Epiphanes is a compound of everything that is corrupt and wicked. He's a combination of everything that's corrupt and wicked. Now, we know him as Antiochus Epiphanes, but his enemies called him Antiochus Epimanes. Epimanes is another word for maniac. We get our word maniac from it. Antiochus Epiphanes actually didn't start out cruel. He started out weird. He was really, really eccentric, and he was kind of crazy. There was a rival king that had held this festival, and with it he had this big parade and this big procession. Everybody was just talking about it. And Antiochus said, I'm not going to be outdone. And so he held this month-long festival. And then at the end of it, he had this amazing parade to show off this rival king. It contained at the beginning 5,000 Roman-like soldiers, followed by 5,000 Mysian soldiers, followed by 3,000 Seleucian soldiers, followed by 3,000 Thracian soldiers, followed by 5,000 Gaul, 5,000 Macedonian, all bearing these shields of gold and silver and brass. And they were followed by 250 gladiators who were fighters. They were followed by 4,000 horsemen. Can you imagine a parade like this? And they were followed by 5,000 cavalry. And then there were hundreds of chariots. Some of them were being drawn by horses. Some of them were being drawn by elephants. He was just going all out. And then there were hundreds of princes, hundreds of princesses. And they went along perfuming the crowd. There were hundreds of ivory tusks. It was absolutely fabulous. I mean, you talk about pomp and ceremony. But the very last thing to come on the parade was guess who? Yeah, Antiochus Epiphanes. He was nearly naked. He was dressed as a court jester with what little he had on. And he was just doing weird stuff in front of the crowd because he was a maniac. He started out really, really weird. In fact, he at one time spiked the city water supply of Antioch with booze, thinking, I'm going to get everybody drunk. Well, it was too watered down. It didn't work. But he was known to do dumb things. He was in a bathhouse and he heard some guy behind him talking about these rich guys who come in with their fancy oils. And the next day, he comes in with fancy oils. He pours them all, has his men pour them all over, and he starts sliding around on them. And really, bizarre behavior for a king. But he was weird, and he was trying to win the people over. And he was really a joker who turned into a madman. Something snapped when a certain event took place. Now, you remember how Egypt and Syria were always fighting back and forth and giving each other a bloody nose. Well, when Antiochus came to the throne, it had been a while. So he was going to start another war with Egypt, but the Romans intercepted him. They were at this time flexing their muscle, and they said no, and they turned him back. And he was furious. He had his hand slapped. And so on the way back, he vents out his rage. Guess who? On Israel. The Jewish people. Now, Rome didn't care if Antiochus Epiphanes whooped up on the Jews. Really, nobody did. And so they kind of became the punching bag. Antiochus Epiphanes made it his goal to Hellenize the Jews, to get them to conform, because he absolutely hated their devout allegiance to Jehovah God. He knew all about that, and he made it his goal to Hellenize them. Now, again, what does Hellenizing mean? Well, we talk about the American way, and we're talking about our American culture, just the way we are, and it's something that kind of evolves over time. Well, Greece had a certain lifestyle, and if you were acting like the Greeks, that's Hellenism. So just know it's Hellenistic culture, is Greek culture. And so anyway, he was so infatuated with that, that he decided he wanted to Hellenize the Jews. That's what led to the Maccabean revolt. And we'll talk about that later. But you know, that's exactly what the Antichrist is going to try and do. He's going to go after the Jews. This is not a new thing. Antiochus wanted to make the Jews a certain way and conform them into a certain way and get them to recant of their godly ways. And this is age old. You know that during the Dark Ages, the Church of Rome took our Anabaptist forefathers into the torture chambers of the castles of Europe and put them on the racks and did all kinds of torturous things to them, trying to get them to do one thing. Recant. Remember that word. Recant. In other words, renounce your faith, denounce your God and your Christianity. And of course, our Anabaptist forefathers would not do that. But to recant means to renounce what you believe. And honestly, folks, that is the goal of the heathen. I mean, we see this spirit amongst us today. We currently have a lot of ungodliness, ungodly folks trying to shove ungodly stuff down our throat and get us to accept it. Well, folks, it's a free country. They can believe what they want to believe, but they're not free to make us believe what they want to believe. You get the difference? All right. They can do that stuff, I guess, but we don't have to agree to it. But the ungodly crowd today is bold, and they're bound determined to get you and me to accept their sin and tolerate this. Don't do it. Now, be gracious, but be firm. We cannot accept this ungodliness. Really, the door of freedom swings both ways, doesn't it? And they don't like that fact. Well, they talk about that, but they don't like that. They don't want us to have our rights too. And so here's Antiochus Epiphanes. He's bound determined to make the Jews to conform to his twisted, filthy standards, and they're just not going to do it. And so verses 22 through 24 reveal how the Jews fared under the reign of Antiochus Epiphanes. And those three verses encompass about a 5-year period from 175 BC to 170 BC, the first 5 years of the reign of the man Antiochus Epiphanes. So in verse 22, as we move on, it says, "And with the arms of a flood shall they be overflown from before him, and shall be broken, yea, also the prince of the covenant." So backing up, we know that this vile person, Antiochus Epiphanes, comes to the throne, not rightfully, but by flatteries. And verse 22 says, and with the arms. Notice the continuation of him. "And with the arms of a flood shall they be overflown from before him," Antiochus Epiphanes, "and shall be broken, yea, also the prince of the covenant." Now, who's the they here? Who's the they that's going to be broken as Antiochus Epiphanes comes to the throne? Well, whenever anyone is jockeying for position or control, there are always those who are on his side. There are always those who oppose him. If that person gets elected, stop and think about it, woe be to those who opposed him. They are either not in good grace or they are in trouble, as it were. And this is kind of like any political candidate today. We've heard of endorsements. All right. You endorse a guy, he gets elected. You're in good graces. If he doesn't, you're a dirty dog. So now it mentions here in verse 22, and with the arms of a flood shall they be overflown. Let's just back up at the beginning and talk about the arms of a flood. That they are those who opposed Antiochus Epiphanes. What's this arms of a flood shall they be broken? We've talked about this already. When that word flood is used in that context, it's speaking of an invading army. You remember that? I'll give you an example of this. Isaiah 8 says, now therefore, behold, the Lord bringeth up upon them the waters of the river, strong and many, even the king of Assyria and all his glory. And he shall come up over all his channels and go over all his banks, and he shall pass through Judah. He shall overflow and go over. He shall reach even to the neck, and the stretching out of his wings shall fill the breadth of thy land, O Emmanuel. This is, by the way, a fulfillment of exactly what's going to happen here in Daniel, written many years before. So it mentions here this overflowing army, this flood, and what it is an invading army. And you find this in Jeremiah 46. You find this in Revelation 12. You find this in Isaiah 17. They all teach the same thing. And so this actually prophesied Antiochus Epiphanes doing this. So he becomes king, and now he has an army. He has an army. What is it that makes a dictator a dictator? His army. Do you ever stop and you think that thing through? I mean, really, it takes a revolt or a coup d'etat to get rid of a king, and it's going to take the army to actually side with a high-ranking general or the country to just rise up together. But as long as that dictator controls that army, you have a bad situation. If you can control the army, you can control the country. And now Antiochus Epiphanes has an army. And guess what? It's like a toy to him. Oh, I got my own army here. And so he's going to use it to go after some people. Now, he can't use it on Egypt. He's already had his hands clapped there, right, by the Romans. But he's going to use it on the Jews, because the Romans don't care if you bully the Jews. So he assembles his army and he goes out and he starts to bully the Jews with it. And by the way, the Antichrist is going to use his army to make him somebody. We find in Revelation 13, and he causeth all small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads, and that no man might buy or sell, save or except he that had the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. And we know that's that 666 chip, and basically we see that being used already in the universal parcel thing on the barcode on everything we buy. But we find here the Antichrist is going to be able to control everybody with this chip, and that cashless system is already coming into place. You know, I used to preach on this stuff decades ago as though I was speculating on it, and now I don't get to do that anymore. It's already going on. We all go, yeah, so? But the Antichrist is going to peddle this cashless system, this chip, if you will, as a good thing. It can eliminate crime. There will be no black market. There will be no drug cartel. There will be no money laundering, no embezzling, no cheating on taxes. And everybody's going to go, yeah, you know what? That's a good thing. But really, it's a control thing. Folks, it's all about control. With Antiochus Epiphanes, it was all about control. With the devil, it's always been about control. The devil is a control freak. And the problem with our nations, the problem with our homes, the problem even in churches, sometimes comes down to control. Who's in control? So the Antichrist is going to want to keep tabs on everybody. And here's Antiochus Epiphanes. He wants to do the same. Now, he's not going to be tolerant to the Jewish people. He is going to make them submit. And no one's going to be able to resist him. And so it is with the Antichrist. You're going to have to submit or... And we find in Revelation 20, John says, and I saw the souls of them that were beheaded for the witness of Jesus and for the word of God, which had not worshipped the beast. They wouldn't do it, and that's why they're beheaded. Neither his image, neither had received his mark in their foreheads or in their hands, and they lived and reigned with Christ 1,000 years. Well, what happened to them? They were put to death by the Antichrist because they wouldn't cooperate. And the Antichrist will not tolerate anyone who doesn't cooperate. The Antichrist will be given power over all nations, and he's going to start out charming, but he's going to seize power and he's going to go berserk. He's going to have an army, and it all parallels each other. So in verse number 22 again, it says, "And with the arms of a flood shall they," that they are those who opposed Antiochus, which would include the Jews, "be overflown from before him." What's that word overflown mean? It's the Hebrew word shatav. It means conquered. It means decimated. It means inundated. Those who opposed him are going to be destroyed and done in and done away with. That's what it means. They shall be overflown. Now, it goes on and it says, "overflown from before him and shall be broken, yea, also the prince of the covenant." Now, this is very interesting. Who is the prince of the covenant? Well, this all involves, again, Hellenizing the Jewish people, because Antiochus was totally enamored with this. He could not compete with the Roman army. He could not compete with the Roman roads and the Roman Empire. But he still wanted to make his mark someplace and leave a legacy behind. So his determination became to Hellenize that part of the world. That was what he was going to do. Rome's a long ways away. So the goal of Antiochus became to Hellenize that region. And this is where the Jewish people dug in. And by the way, as the ungodly seek to indoctrinate us, that's their agenda, starting with young people, we have to dig in. They know where the opposition is. Did you know that? They understand that Bible-believing Christians like us are going to withstand that. They're well aware of that. They talk about that. Don't think for a moment they're dumb. They're foolish, yes. Dumb, no. They know where the opposition is. I'll guarantee you that. Antiochus Epiphanes knew beforehand where the resistance would come from. And it wasn't from the rest of the heathen. It was from those Jews. He knew about their worship even. You know, he had studied their worship just to go after them. He knew about Jehovah. He knew how to defile the temple, offer swine on the altar. He knew how to desecrate it. He knew exactly what he's doing. The heathen do. They know what they're doing. And so we find out, the Jews to Antiochus Epiphanes were like a grain of sand in the eye. He absolutely hated them. And so he goes after them. And by the way, the Antichrist will go wholesale after Christian people. Now, you say, how can that be? Because aren't Christians raptured before that thing takes place? Well, yes, but there are two witnesses. We know about them. They go and they win these 144,000 Jewish male evangelists to the Lord. Revival breaks out. And by the way, persecution has always been good for the conversion of sinners. It hasn't been affluence and prosperity. That just kills it. But it's been hard times. And so during the tribulation period, that guillotine is going to be working overtime and populating heaven. The devil knows where the opposition is. And Antiochus knew that it was the Jewish people. To the Jews, it wasn't just their religion. It was a way of life. It was a way of life. You know, there are political candidates who run for office and they'll talk about being a member of the Chamber of Commerce and the JCs and this group and that group. And they helped that committee and they worked with the Boy Scouts. And have you ever noticed on their resume, they always go a member of such and such Lutheran church or Catholic church or Baptist church. That is a good for measure, kind of a little tidy thing to have going for you. And most people, that's really their religion. It's just kind of, that's a good thing to add on. But when I got saved, it became my life. It became your life when you got saved. But I remember how it was. I'd go to church. I'd get my little religious ditty in and go back to doing my own thing the rest of the week. But boy, when you get converted, it's your life. Well, to an Orthodox Jew, it's not a way of life or just a part of life. It is your whole life. It is your whole life. When I came back from Israel several months ago, I was on a Jewish plane, and I was probably the only Christian on the plane. I mean, I saw all the hats and the flag trees and all. It was like, whoa, I was surrounded. And these were Orthodox Jews. And I'm telling you, they were very, very serious about what they believed. And you saw them praying in the airport out the window before they left. And I mean, at the time of Antiochus, those Jews who were on board were really on board. They were on board 1,000%. And so here's Antiochus Epiphanes and his Hellenism. Here's the Jews and their Judaism. And these things are on a collision course because Antiochus became obsessed with changing the Jews. And by the way, there is a crowd today that is obsessed with changing the thinking of Americans. And if we are silent, they will succeed. They will succeed. You know, a while back, I was preaching here and I stated a very simple Bible concept. And basically, Christ said from the beginning, God made them male and female. And I got an email from somebody afterwards that said, well, Pastor, you got to be careful. That's hate speech and so on. And this is an individual, not anyone here comes faithfully, but somebody that I know has been groomed and tutored by the humanists to think a certain way and subtly has bought into it. Folks, you will subtly buy into this because these ungodly folks are very vocal. Do not be bullied into submission when it comes to this stuff, okay? I got to admire a governor in a southern kind of central state recently. Living in the governor mansion, this lady's kids had drawn some crosses and chalk stuff out on the governor's sidewalk leading in. Boy, I'm telling you, a liberal group came after them and blasted them. And you need to tell your kids not to do that and don't ever allow that again. And she just came back and said, no, I won't. And nor will I be bullied by you. This is America and I have my say and so on. It's like she just shut them up. And I thought to myself, good for her. Good for her. We need more of that. So here's Antiochus, and he's absolutely obsessed with changing the Jews. He's going to have his way with them. He wants to get them to recant and to embrace his ungodly agenda. He's determined to do that. And that sounds familiar. Human nature hasn't changed at all. And really, since Adam and Eve, the devil has fought the same way. And here's the problem. Sinful human nature gets convicted or under conviction when somebody is trying to promote godliness, a godly life. And that makes the ungodly uncomfortable. That's called conviction. Remember that. And nobody likes to feel conviction. Conviction is uncomfortable. And so here's the Jewish people trying to do right. By the way, at this time they were. The Jews have been permanently cured of idolatry since the time of Nebuchadnezzar. In fact, by the time of Christ, it was over the top. It still is today. But here's the Jews trying to live right. And that was an irritant to Antiochus. It rubbed them the wrong way. Now, at the time of the Jewish people in Jerusalem trying to rebuild, they did not have a king. They did not have a judge like we read back in the Old Testament. They had a leader, but it was not a political leader. The leader of the Jewish people was the high priest. You say, what does this have to do with verse 22? We're trying to identify who this Prince of the Covenant is, all right? The Jewish people only had a high priest. And the highest authority amongst the Jewish people at that time was the high priest. He was kind of like the pastor of the temple. And so if Antiochus is going to get the Jews to compromise, if he's going to take them down, he's got to take down the high priest. Now, when we hear the word high priest or that expression, we immediately think of corruption, don't we? Because we fast forward it to the time of Christ, and guys like Annas and guys like Caiaphas were awful. They were just the scum of the earth. They were the high priest, and it was an office that you bought. But keep in mind, this is 200 years before that, okay? And really, I am going to show you, and we're running out of time, but I'm going to show you where the corruption got started. And so, look at the tail end of verse 22, and we got to quit here. But it mentions, yea, also the Prince of the Covenant. So it's telling us the people who opposed Antiochus rising to the top are going to go down. And so is this Prince of the Covenant. The year is 175 B.C. Who is the high priest? His name is Onias, better known as Onias the Third. We'll just call him Onias. He was likely a believer. Now, that's hard to find at that time, but by everything I've read on him, he, I believe, had his faith in the coming Messiah. He had it. He was sincere and he was honest and he was truly a man of God. And I think we've all heard of the Dead Sea Scrolls. OK, the Dead Sea Scrolls, there's writings more than just Old Testament books. There's a lot of history in those Dead Sea Scrolls and found in some of those pottery jars in the Qumran caves. Onias's name is mentioned on it. He was a godly man. A true man of God. And in verse 22, that expression, the Prince of the Covenant, That's Onias. That's Onias. How would Antiochus Epiphanes take down this godly man? Well, we're going to learn a lot about the devil's tactics as we take a look at it. He needed a traitor. He needed a Judas, as it were, basically a rat fink. The devil's tactics never change. And so Antiochus is going to find that man amongst the Jews, and with him, he's going to take down this prince of the covenant mentioned in verse 22. And we'll pick up with that next time.
You've been listening to Pastor Tony Skeving of the Fargo Baptist Church in Fargo, North Dakota. If you would like a CD of today's message, you can obtain one by sending a gift of $2 to Fargo Baptist Church, 3303 23rd Avenue South, Fargo, North Dakota, 58103. That address again, Fargo Baptist Church, 3303 23rd Avenue South, Fargo, North Dakota, 58103. We hope you'll join Pastor Skeving next time right here on Pulpit Power. Pulpit Power is a production of Heaven 88.7.